Big Hurt Weird Adventures. And welcome to a brand new episode of Big Heckin' Weird Adventures. I'm one half of the Adventures crew. They call me the Lavish One. They call me Chucky Smooth. They also call me Charles Smoothington. And a brand new nickname that I was saving for when we would record this together, Big Heck. Sorry, brother. I'm going to let you know. You're going to hear it with everybody else. The new name, the new nickname I'm adding to my long list of nicknames is El Chocolate Caliente. Google Translate that, y'all. Y'all know what it is. But on a serious note, I'm doing this one solo dolo. This is a solo adventure or one shot, depending on how you look at it. It's just me rocking out by myself. You're getting this special episode, and it is a special one. On a Sunday. That's right. Just this one time only. Hopefully it doesn't happen again. Between life and everything going on with me and Big Heck, and when I'll talk about that a little bit later, I had to get this episode out. I felt we had been away for too long without an episode, and I really wanted to get it out here for you guys. Last week, we couldn't record. I had laryngitis. Sucks ass. The one thing I love doing is talking, and with my job, I have to talk. Working in a classroom, it sucks not being able to talk and not being able to use your voice. I was legit out for a week. And Big Heck, good brother, said, nah, man, we can't roll like that. I can't do an episode without you, brother. It doesn't feel right. It feels weird. Even though he's done it a few times in the past. Shout out to Hill Carm for filling in for me that time. He said he wanted to do this together. We're on a new adventure and a new path together, and I totally respect that. So we took a week hiatus. All the news that we're going to talk about in this show, or I'm going to deliver to you in the show, me and Big Heck, we're going to deliver together, guys. We were going to talk about so much going on. But I realized something checking the calendar and running through the whole itinerary, everything. I told the good brother, Big Heck, I said, man, you're not going to be able to record me on Friday. Because that's our usual record day. Our usual record day is either Thursday, but most likely Friday due to the fact that it's the weekend and we got time before we drop the episode out for y'all. And come to find out, Friday was Valentine's Day. Oh boy. Gonna be a little difficult to record with your good brother, Big Heck, aka the Spanish God. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. He is the Spanish God. So whenever you see Big Heck, call him the Spanish God. Tell him Wade said that. Wade said you are officially the Spanish God. Screw Sammy Guevara. You're the Spanish God. He is going to kill me when he hears this episode. I know he is. But guys, let's talk about the news a little bit. Let's talk about what's going on in the comic book world. And there's a lot of DC news going on. A lot of big DC stuff happening out there. And I want to touch on Matt Reeves on Thursday put out on Vimeo and through all social media, because it spread like wildfire, our first look, and he dubbed this a hashtag camera test, of Robert Pattinson in the Batman suit for the first time ever. For the first time ever. We got our look at Robert Pattinson, and I was legit floored with this. Now, I know he's gotten a lot of flack for being Batman, and, you know, people said he's not going to be good. He's going to suck at it. He's not a great actor. He's only done indie films. We don't expect much of him. He's done Twilight. He's played Sparkling Vampire. But he looked pretty good in the suit. And we didn't even see the whole cowl. We just saw the cow and the jawline. We didn't see the ears, the bat ears. So we don't know if they're going to be long bat ears or somewhere in the middle or somewhat like Affleck's and, you know, kind of smaller. But I want to talk about one of the awesome details of the suit. And it had a mix of things in it. But one thing I want to touch on is the emblem on the chest plate. If you guys took a very good look at it, and you can see pictures on our Instagram at Big Heck Wade Adventures, nice plug there. The bat emblem was made from the gun that Joe Chill shot that killed Bruce's parents. Now, comic book fans, majority, or even, I don't even know if it's a majority, because I discussed this with a few Batman fans who I know are like knee deep in it and love that character, never knew that in one of Batman's story arcs, when they were explaining his origin, was that he took the gun that Joe Chill shot, melted it down, and used it as a symbol to strike fear into the hearts of those who did wrong, who caused things, who shook, rattled the cages a little bit. And I actually have the quote of what he said when he was forging this, and Alfred asked him why was he doing this? Why was this even coming about? And the quote goes like this: "I'm going to take that metal. I'm going to make that metal pay for its sins. I'm going to burn the metal that killed my parents, and I'll forge it into something useful." And that's what he did. That's definitely what he did. And I love that Matt Reeves has pulled elements from Batman's entire universe so far in this one little outfit. And we're getting little pieces of the outfit that were like, people are saying, oh, it's from this, it's from Arkham Knight, it's from the Arkham series, it's from Batman Noel. We may even get, some people are speculating, because it was shot in a red light, that we may even get the purple gloves. The original Batman suit had purple gloves before it transitioned into him wearing blue and gray, or blue, gray, and yellow, or black and gray, or even the current outfit he has now with the black, gray, purple, and gold. So many different outfits or eras pulled into one whole outfit. And it got a lot of controversy around it, and people didn't like it. People said, you know, you shot it with a red filter, it looks like Daredevil. You got to learn to let things go, man. Enjoy them for what they are. If you don't like it, you don't have to rant and rave about it. Just don't support it. Just chill out with it, you know? Enjoy it for what it is. That's my personal opinion. That's how I feel about it. I, for one, am so excited for this. It's going to be one of my top-notch movies to see. And I believe it comes out 2021. Yeah, 2021, next summer. We will finally get Matt Reeves and Batman. And that just gives me ideas on how the other costumes are going to look. If this is what we're getting with Batman's costume, I can't wait to see what Catwoman looks like, or what the Riddler's going to look like. Also, something interesting popped up, and I wanted to bring this up before we move on to our next bit of news. Jeffrey Wright posted on his Twitter, and then deleted it, a black and white film. I think it was maybe 5-6 seconds tops of a signal shining in the light moving around the city. He deleted it, but people caught it. You know how the internet works. You can't get away far with these things, and they're gonna eventually catch up. So be careful what you post sometimes. Hinting at the bat signal. Hinting at maybe Commissioner Gordon standing on the rooftop waiting for Batman to arrive to let him know what's going on in Gotham. Pretty interesting. Just saying. The next bit of news I want to talk about is Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are teaming up once again and have officially announced. That's right. Officially announced the sequel to Dark Knight's Metal, entitled Dark Knight's Death Metal. Now, we had gotten a post maybe a month ago with Wonder Woman with a chainsaw, and the Lasso of Truth was the starter to it. And we were like, ah, man, it's going to be another one of those stories where it's a metal story. and it's going to be crazy. And we already saw by the picture and the way it was looking, like, yeah, this is going to be another metal story. We just don't have a title. We don't know what it's about. We have no idea what's going on. Or this is going to be another Batman story where Batman is the main focus of it all. And come to find out, on Thursday, Snyder and Capullo made the official announcement that this story, Dark Knight's Death Metal, will be a Wonder Woman-centered story. Which is cool because, honestly, we always associate Capullo and Snyder with Batman. Hell of a run. One of the most amazing comic book runs in history. That went on the span of maybe a year or two. The good brother Jose and I talked about this numerous times. Shout out to Nerd Empire Wrestling Podcast. We miss you, brother. We need you back out here on the airwaves doing what you do best and giving that real wrestling talk. But this is something different for him because he's, as much as he's written Justice League stuff, and that's what he's doing currently now before he hands it off, he is doing a Wonder Woman-centric story. Now, he said already that this story will start in the spring of this year. It'll have a nice little run through August with multiple tie-ins running through the DC Universe as expected because it happened with Metal. And then they have a two-month break, and they come back in November with the grand finale. It's going to be a six-part miniseries. Awesome. Can't wait to see it. And if you haven't seen these variant covers, oh my God. And they are, if you'd like to see them, please go check out, again, our Instagram, Big Heck Wade Adventures, and also Big Heck Wade ADV on Twitter. Posted all the images. You guys can check them out there. Man, I'm telling you, I am excited for this comic. Can't wait. Oh, also, in comic book news, related to Big Heck and Wade, ladies and gentlemen, we have just acquired our ZapCon 4 tickets. That's right. Big Heck and Wade will be attending ZapCon 4. We always said we wanted to go to a comic con or a comic convention together, and this is our first time together going as a unit. We're going to bring Heel Carm and the chillins. We're going to bring the chillins with us this time, and they get to see some of the cool panels, cool artists. So much is going to be going on that day, and we're going to be early birds. It's sweet, man. You guys can still pick up tickets at Zap Comics. Shout out to Zap Comics, man. My local comic book store. Been going to them for a couple years. I stopped going when I was a kid, and then I came back as an adult. Never looked back. Love that store. Shout out to Corey and the guys over there. I was just there today, as a matter of fact, and picked up a few things. And weather bearing, man, it's going to be a great night, a great day. But guys, I'm going to take a quick break right here. We're going to pop in a sponsor. We'll be right back after these messages. And we're back, or I'm back, for the continuation of our brand new episode for your listening pleasure. Guys, I wanted to get into a review of the, what movie is this? The eighth film. It's like eight. Yeah, wow. Going through it in my head, it's about eight movies in the DC Universe. That's right. We are going to touch on Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn, which news outlets are reporting that the movie title has been changed to Harley Quinn Birds of Prey. Don't know why. I know what it is. We knew Harley was going to be in this movie, and we were also going to be introduced to some new characters. The movie stars Margot Robbie returning as Harley Quinn, Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Helena Bertinelli, a.k.a. Huntress. We had Journey Smollett-Bell, I hope to God I'm not butchering her name, as Dinah Lance, a.k.a. Black Canary. Rosie Perez as Detective Montoya. Chris Messina as Victor Zsasz. Ella J. Basco as Cassandra Cain, and Ewan McGregor as Roman Sionis, aka Black Mask. Now, when this film was announced, I thought legit Birds of Prey was going to be, in my head, Birds of Prey versus Gotham City Sirens. For those of you in the comic book world, you know who the Sirens are. It's Catwoman, Poison Ivy, and Harley Quinn. And the Birds of Prey, majority of the time, consists of Batgirl, Huntress, Black Canary, and they may throw in another hero, female hero every now and then. I thought Cassandra Cain was going to be the substitute since she was Batgirl at one point in the New 52. Yeah, I want to say New 52. New 52? Or pre-New 52. She was Batgirl at one point before becoming Orphan. Now, the movie's centered around, and it's being told, so this is what I wanted to completely explain to everybody. For the people who said the plot was confusing, and I did realize it jumped all over the place. But you have to remember, spoiler warning before we get into this, spoiler warning, this entire story of everybody involved was told through the mind of Harley Quinn. And I hate to say it, Harley is very intelligent, but she's also nuts. So the story's gonna jump from here to there to everywhere. It's gonna be, oh, we're here, we're gonna be there. Basically, it's a movie on with ADD or ADHD. Hope that doesn't offend anybody, but that's the best case scenario I can give you. Movie kicks off with Harley Quinn basically saying that her and the Joker have broken up, and we see her make the transition of being the Joker's girlfriend, and thumbs up for those who were happy about this. Jared Leto, nowhere to be found. There was a little glimpse of a Joker, but we only saw him from the back of his head, so you didn't use Jared Leto completely, but his character was, or his version of the Joker was used for the Birds of Prey flashbacks, to show the breakup. Harley Quinn's moving throughout the city, doing whatever she wants, because no one knows that her and Joker broke up except maybe one person, and they didn't tell. She starts living lavishly, going crazy, tearing up the city, joins a roller derby team. Love that. That was a nice little touch, because her new 52 outfit looks like a roller derby outfit. So I like that they mix that in there a little bit. And then she goes to Roman Sionis, aka Black Mask Nightclub, causes a wreck, tears stuff up. Come to find out, people find out that she's not with the Joker after a massive explosion at Ace Chemicals. Then we meet our other characters in the movie. We meet Detective Renee Montoya, played by Rosie Perez. Who, fun fact of the movie, everybody says this throughout it. All the characters say that she talks like a cheesy ass 80s cop from 80s cop dramas. Everything that she did, legit. And this is probably completely different from what happened through her eyes in the story. It was told as Harley Quinn, so everything was like cheesy 80s cop. She had to hand in the badge at some point because of her reckless behavior, and she said, "What happens if she hit her with the cheese line of what happens because the badge doesn't mean anything if it's not being used properly?" We also meet Helena Bertinelli, who I loved personally in this movie. I wish we could have gotten more with her, but her origin was explained so late. Come to find out that there was a mob hit on her family, and she's basically targeting after being trained by some of the people who one of the people who actually shot her family into seeking revenge, and she goes on this killing spree collecting heads of pretty much everybody who took her family away from her. That's her story. She's got massive anger issues. They don't even call her Huntress. She calls herself Huntress. Everybody throughout the movie calls her the Crossbow Killer because that's how basically she kills everybody. That's her trademark. Let's see who else. Cassandra Cain. The wild card of this movie for me. That she was cool for what she was used for, I guess, as a plot piece and something that made the characters kind of come together, like she was the glue. She ends up stealing something very important from Black Mask. She's a pickpocket, basically. A snot-nosed punk kid who takes things from people, robs, steals just to get ahead in life. And she's an orphan. They stuck with that, but she's a pickpocket. That's what she does. She's just a snot-nosed kid. I wanted it to be more where she becomes the badass Cassandra Cain that we know, where she was trained by assassins, doesn't speak or barely speaks, and handles her business and can pretty much body you hands down one on one. But again, she was cool for what she was there for. Black Canary, played by our Journey Smollett-Bell. She killed it. For the little bit we got with her, and I was expecting her to dominate the movie or get enough screen time with Harley Quinn, because they're the most well-known characters in this movie. I felt she would get more time, and what time she got, she definitely ran with and crushed it. Completely crushed it. We saw the canary cry, which she's a young canary, so she's the second generation. Because come to find out, her mom, the original Black Canary, was killed off. She was working with the cops. Detective Montoya and her had a history, and she ends up getting killed. Which Canary and Montoya have a little bit of a beef, and she said, "I wouldn't help you if you paid me. I'm not working with you like that because my mother was killed and you guys did nothing about it." Now let's get to the big problem everybody had or was going into the movie, or they believed the rumors around it. They just have a very odd relationship. And I'm gonna say very odd relationship. I guess he's the person that keeps him in check. 'Cause they said they're gay in the movie. That was the big thing about this. Black Mask and Victor Zsasz, two major, I'm gonna say maybe not major. They're high on the Batman level list. They're not Joker, Penguin, Riddler, Two-Face, Bane, Catwoman on occasion. Batman villains, but they're recognizable to everybody, and they've had some major storylines throughout Batman's universe. Even Zsasz. Those two had an odd relationship where it came off very like, what's the words I want to use? They felt very attached. Like Zsasz was the one that kept Black Mask from snapping, or kept Roman from snapping off or going too far. And he would always pull him back. And he never talked crazy to Zsasz, which was funny to me. They never talked crazy to each other. Roman would go off and snap and do little things that were like gonna push him over, and Zsasz would be the one to bring him back. I also love the one scene with the when he had to teach a family a lesson, and he told Zsasz to cut their faces off, right? So he was gonna spare. He was gonna spare the one daughter from the family just to teach her a lesson. Like, this is what happens. I cut your mom's face off. I cut your dad's face off. And she's crying. And I mean crying, like ugly crying. And then he notices a snot bubble hits his jacket. What does he do? Completely flips the script. It tells Zaz not. Never mind. You know what? It's a snot bubble. This is disgusting. Cut her face off. Crazy stuff, man. This is a weird thing for Ewan McGregor to be doing. I'm used to him playing these very, very super serious roles. And it was fun to see him take a little segue, go a different route. When it comes to selecting roles, he was a standout for me. Margot Robbie, as usual, does her thing as Harley Quinn. And I want to say this movie to me was very good, solid, and I'll give my rating at the end of this. But back to Margot Robbie, because I feel like I'm going all over the place. I'm sorry, guys. My review for this movie is going to be exactly how the movie was, where it was scatterbrained and all over the place, and I'm going to be jumping here and there and everywhere. But Margot Robbie was amazing, as usual. She killed it as Harley Quinn. I expected nothing less. Whenever she was on screen, she killed it. I want to talk about the fight scenes in that movie, though. I know that everyone's going to talk about the funhouse scene, with the booby trap house scene at the end, the big boss battle at the end. And there were also, and this is where one of my favorite worlds comes into play, we got a little bit of some wrestlers in that scene. And they actually put it up on their Instagrams. Shad Gaspar from Crime Time, if y'all don't remember that one of my favorite tag teams back in the day, even though they used to job a lot and get beat. And John Morrison, a.k.a. Johnny Impact, a.k.a. Johnny Mundo, a.k.a. Johnny whatever independent wrestling federation you have. He usually takes on the name of it at the end, but he's John Morrison now because he's in WWE again. They were also, they played some of the henchmen for Black Mask in the movie. But I want to talk about this bat scene. Jeez. All right. So Harley Quinn has to go after Cassandra Cain, who stole the important thing from Black Mask, which was the diamond that had a bunch of information that they could do whatever they wanted. I believe it was to get they can control money throughout bank accounts, anything, all information was in that one diamond built into it. So what does Cassandra Cain do? Swallow the diamond. It's inside her. Harley Quinn has to go into the police station where Cassandra Cain got busted after she stole the diamond from Zaz by just pickpocketing him. And she goes in there and cleans house with a gun. Doesn't kill the cops with the gun. She uses like paintball rounds, confetti rounds. It's like sandbag bullets, rubber bullets. She's just wrecking shop in GCPD, which is weird. Where was Commissioner Gordon? That's what Big Heck kept saying the whole time we were watching the movie. He's like, where the hell is Gordon at? How come he's not here? Where the fuck is Batman? And yes, that is the first curse word I uttered in this show so far. And you know I'm not the one that usually goes off and says a whole bunch of profanity. I'll leave that to the good brother, Big Heck. Shout out to you, brother. Again. She goes into this one scene to go get Cassandra Cain. Cassandra Cain runs away. She runs into the where all the confiscated materials from different crimes are. The crime room, and Harley ends up having to deal with some thugs who are also after her, who Black Mask basically said to go kill her too. And she ends up getting into a little bit of a fight, finding her bat, not her bat, a bat, an aluminum bat, and has to protect herself as these guys are shooting at her, this biker gang. So what happens? She dives behind something, and we all of a sudden we see this powdered dust hit her, and she looks up, and they're shooting cocaine, which is exploding all over the place, the packets of cocaine. So what does Harley do? Sniff it up and go bananas with the bat. She had an adrenaline rush and cleaned house. All I'm saying is, guys, when you check out this movie, because this is a spoiler warning, I'm going to put it in the tags. That bat scene, holy crap, was that amazing. But I'm going to move on from this. Long story short, guys, I'm going to give this movie a 7 out of 10. Very good movie. I loved it. Girl power all the way. If you didn't like this movie, okay, cool, whatever. But I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was a popcorn movie. You sat back and you enjoyed yourself. And you had a pretty good damn time. So this is getting Wade's seal of approval. Go check it out. One of my favorite movies so far this year. But we're going to close the show and move on to a little bit of some wrestling talk. Big Heck's not here. But he did manage to send me his predictions for the upcoming NXT TakeOver Portland show, which is going to be on an hour after you hear this. So when you guys get this at 6 o'clock tomorrow, hopefully you got a little preview to something. You know, you're not chilling, you're not going to watch it, or you just didn't watch TakeOver yet and you avoided the internet. So I'm going to lay out my predictions and Big X predictions for NXT TakeOver Portland, which will be on the network today at 7 o'clock. Pretty cool that a TakeOver is dominating the weekend. No Elimination Chamber, no nothing to follow it, no Big Four, none of the Big Four or Five, depending on the list. But let's get into it. Let's get into the first match, which I feel will kick off the show, and Big Hex in agreement. You got to come in with a bang with this one. So let's start with the Tag Team Championship. The NXT Tag Team Championships are on the line as the Undisputed Eras, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly defend their tag titles against the newly dubbed Broserweights, Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne. Now, this is another thing that NXT loves to do, and I fully support it now, and I'm gonna stop knocking it so hard. Making these mismatched tag teams and making them work. Now, last year in the Dusty Classic, we had Ricochet and Aleister Black. Two complete opposite sides of the spectrum won the entire Dusty Rhodes Classic and went on to face the War Raiders at NXT TakeOver Mania weekend and took a loss. But you know what? Strange bedfellows, that old saying, how that goes. And I completely thought when I saw the brackets that they weren't even going to make it to the finals. These are two singles guys. So they're not going to make it far. They ended up winning the whole thing, beating some of the best tag teams that NXT had to offer. They beat Imperium. They beat Webster and Andrews. And they beat the Grizzled Young Vets in the finals. Now, the cool part is with the Broserweights. The one thing went going into this, I said, you gotta hook me with them a little bit. Matt Riddle's going to be great, but I want to see how this works. And the little vignettes of them and the Broser Mobile and the Broserweight Mobile and all the, you know, little pieces to make the team work and seeing how their in-ring chemistry came together made me believe in this team. And I love this. I love them as a tag team. We need more of that. We need more of that. Now, I know a lot of people are speculating, saying Pete's going to turn on Matt, which I don't see it because Pete got turned on by Roddy 2 years ago. And I don't see them doing rehashing that again where Pete needs to go heel to get over. The guy's over. He's been over. So Big Heck and I are both in agreement with this. And we say the Broserweights take the tag titles at NXT TakeOver Portland. Moving on to match number two, our first of two women's matches on NXT TakeOver Portland, Dakota Kai versus Tegan Nox in a street fight. Now, I'm calling this the female version. It's a little bit of a twist to Gargano and Ciampa. Why am I saying that? Because don't be part of a tag team in Chicago. If you're friends with somebody in Chicago and you're on NXT, you're not going to last. You're most likely going to break up. But with this story, it's a little different. Some similarities between Gargano and Ciampa are you can say about Tegan and Dakota, but comparing it to a comic book, every villain feels they have a justified reason to their actions and doing what they did. And as a fan looking at it, Dakota's justified. She busted her ass to try to be, you can go all the way back to Survivor Series weekend. She busted her ass trying to get on that team, on Rhea Ripley's team, to take on Shayna Baszler's team. And what does she do? She picks Mia Yim. Mia gets taken out. And she's best friends with Tegan. So she's like, yo, why can't I be on the same team with my best friend and help out? Because I have a gripe with Shayna because she took me out. We get to the match. Mia's out. Dakota takes her spot. And we see just before Dakota's about to enter the ring, she comes out the cage and beats the living hell out of Tegan, severing their friendship and ending the tag team of Team Kick or Team Shiny Kick Wizard. They had a name. I just can't remember it right now. But Dakota and Tegan broke up. They are no longer a tag team. And now there's a feud where Tegan is seeking revenge against Dakota for taking her out and eliminating her from the match. Dakota goes on this mean heel streak, ends up facing Tegan in a one-on-one match. Tegan picks up the dub, and then their feud just continues, and it wasn't over because the knee brace, which plays a huge part in this story. There's always a weapon that plays a part in these feuds. And with Ciampa and Gargano was the crutch. This time it's a knee brace because they both had knee injuries. I'm going to go on a limb here. I'm going to say Dakota takes it. Big Heck, on the other hand, disagrees and says Tegan gets the win. I say with a feud, you can't have it where it's a one-sided feud. Otherwise, it's just a wash. You got to have it where they're splitting wins, and you have to have it somewhere, some way, where these two have to have a big match to settle the score and end it once and for all. And you could do it again. You could do it Mania weekend. You could do it on an NXT show and have them in a steel cage or a last woman standing or something with high stakes involved. Because every feud in NXT that has meant something has had a start match, a nice stipulation match, and then a closer with even bigger stipulation than what was said before. Gargano and Cole. Four times throughout the year they went at it. Four times. And what happened every time? There was always a winner and always a loser, and it played out beautifully. We need that again. We need that with this feud, and I'm going to enjoy it. I hope you guys do too. I'm looking forward to that match. Let's get into the second ladies match of the night. The NXT Championship. It's not the Women's Championship anymore. It's the NXT Championship. Rhea Ripley versus Bianca Belair. Big Heck and I are both in agreement. Rhea's going to retain. We both see her retaining and going on to WrestleMania to obviously face Charlotte. But let's not leave Bianca out the picture here, man. She has been on a roll, a major roll since winning the Battle Royal to get the title shot, and even before that, Survivor Series at War Games. And damn, let's not even forget about the Royal Rumble where she showed out and has the record for most eliminations. That girl's been killing it. But I don't see Bianca picking up the win. I don't. Unless the only way you do that is if it turns into a triple threat, which, hey, you want to throw Bianca in the mix after she busted her ass? Go for it. But I just can't see it. I just can't see Bianca getting the dub. I see Bianca eventually moving on and going up to the main, I'm sorry, not main roster, going to Raw with her husband, Montez Ford. I see that happening. And she's already got the charisma, she's already got the natural athleticism to do damage on that roster and add to that women's roster on Raw because they desperately need it. I feel both rosters, SmackDown and Raw, need some women up there because it's getting kind of shaky. It's a little shaky. I mean, even with the addition of Shayna, who attacked Becky and basically became a vampire overnight, even though we know her as the submission magician. That's okay, I guess. She bit her in the neck. Couldn't just have her beat her up. She had to bite her too. That's cool. But we're not talking about Raw SmackDown. We're talking about NXT. And Rhea Ripley will beat Bianca Belair for and retain the NXT Championship. Then we have the North American Championship. Keith Lee versus Dominik Dijakovic. Not much that needs to be said about this match. Honestly, they're gonna tear it up. They've done it multiple times. Multiple times. You guys just put them on a bigger stage with NXT TakeOver. You have two of the best guys on your roster, especially Keith Lee. And I know Dijakovic is going to do his thing, but he's not getting that dub either. Obviously, Big Heck, who is a very big Keith Lee fan, very huge Keith Lee fan, and I are both in agreement. Keith Lee is going to retain here. Keith Lee's going to retain and have a very solid reign with that North American Championship, where we will bask in his glory. Yes. Keith Lee will retain the North American Championship. And the match that it's not even a championship. This is a feud. A feud. Finn Balor versus Johnny Gargano. Mr. Takeover himself, Johnny Takeover, Johnny Wrestling, the whole shebang. My personal favorite wrestler on NXT. Yes, I am a huge Johnny Gargano mark. Anybody that knows me knows that is my guy. I'm paraphrasing because I know somebody else says this a lot. That's their guy. Johnny's their guy. But no, you guys know me. You guys who listen to this podcast or know me before this podcast even jumped off. You guys know Johnny Gargano is one of my favorite wrestlers. And he is going up against the guy that put NXT on the map. That's right. I said it. If you were to do a list of NXT stars who paved the way, Finn at one, Johnny at two. These two guys. The past and the current of NXT are going to put on an amazing match. It all started when Finn came to NXT. We didn't even expect him to be there. Came in and said he was going to make changes, and boy, did he when he dropped Johnny, thus ending Johnny's takeover streak and he didn't appear at the last takeover for Takeover War Games, and took Johnny out for an amount of time, busted his head open. Johnny had to get stitches and was out for some time. So Finn ran roughshod, took out whoever he wanted, eventually got a match with Adam Cole. Finn was on the verge of winning. Johnny returns, costs Finn the NXT title, leading into the match that should have happened at War Games. Not knocking the match with Riddle and Finn. That was a damn good match. But we now get Johnny versus Finn one-on-one, past versus current. And I love the promo work that they've been cutting on each other. And you can go back to last week's episode when on NXT when Finn and Johnny were going back and forth. And Johnny hit him with the line that made this feud just... I was already sold. But when he popped that line, and I'm sorry, Heel Karm is a huge Finn Balor fan. Huge. I love you, Karm. But this is true. Even you laughed at it. Johnny told him, he said, if this is Smiley lose to Bobby Lashley for 17 weeks straight, I'm going to eat that guy alive. I want the Finn from NXT. I want the Finn Balor that has heart, that's going to go out there and try to take me out. That's the Finn I want. Not Smiley Guy Finn, which, oh boy, Smiley Guy Finn. If whatever roster he comes back to, that's the Finn we should keep. We don't need him smiling like that all the time. I know the ladies like it. It's a cool thing, but this Dark Prince Finn? Fantastic. But Big Heck and I are both in agreement. We are both giving Finn Balor the win. Finn Balor would defeat Johnny Gargano. Sorry, Aerie. But Finn will defeat Johnny Gargano. My niece is a big Johnny fan, too. And I know she's going to probably hear this and be mad at me. Be so mad at me. So, heck, this is on you. Karm, this is on you. She cannot listen to this part of the episode. You can just fast forward to the end stuff. Or the next match I'm about to talk about, which is our closer to TakeOver. Ciampa, Tommaso Ciampa, goes one-on-one with the second longest reigning NXT champion. If he does defeat Ciampa, he will be the longest reigning, knocking Finn out of his spot. Adam Cole, baby. And I hate to say it, man. I do not see Ciampa walking out with the belt. I know Daddy's home and he's come back from an amazing recovery from a bad injury that should have taken him out and ended him. But Adam Cole's going to keep it. He's going to retain. He's going to move on to carry that belt and pass up Finn Balor. And why not? Adam Cole... And he's someone I like. I could watch his matches. He's so damn good in the ring. Great on the mic. Can kill it hands down. Why not let that guy have that ring? Records are meant to be broken all the time. All the time. No matter what. It happens. It doesn't happen right away, but it's going to happen. Adam Cole is going to pass up Finn Balor as the longest reigning NXT champion. Adam Cole, as soon as he became champion, when he defeated Johnny at TakeOver after Mania, proved himself, busted his ass, had top-notch matches with Johnny Gargano for a majority of the year, did double duty wrestling in a War Games match, the night at one night, and then defending the NXT championship the next night against Pete Dunne. And let's not forget about when this whole NXT versus Raw versus SmackDown thing started. He wrestled Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins in the same week. Adam Cole's crushing it, man. Don't dim it now. And I know we love Ciampa. We all love Ciampa. Ciampa is one of the pillars of NXT right now. And I know his reign was cut short due to injury, but I don't see him getting it. I don't see Ciampa stealing this and becoming champion and, you know, daddy's coming back home with the gold. I don't see it. I really don't. Sorry, Heck. Big Heck picked Ciampa. I'm going Adam Cole. Hands down, Adam Cole retains. And that's my summary, along with Big Heck's input of NXT TakeOver Portland. But guys, the show has come to an end. We are about to close. I'm getting tired. It's been a long night, weekend. Want to give a shout out to the good brother, Big Heck. Brother, I love you. I had to do this episode, man. I owed it to you. Because you had to do your Spanish God duties. He is going to kill me when he hears this. I already know he is. But I want to give a major shout out to the good brothers of, and we are a part of this network as well, the Fourth Wall Pop Network. Guys, please give them a follow. So, you know, like, share, spread the love. Let everybody know about this. We are available on all streaming platforms. If you want to check out Fourth Wall, go to their Facebook at Fourth. That's 4TH Wallcast. If you want to find them on Twitter, us on Twitter, Fourth Wall. That's FourthWall Pop. Pop, where you make it pop. And follow them on Instagram. Fourth, that's with the number 4, THWALCAST. Also want to give a huge shout out to our sponsor, Brickhouse Power Coffee. Please go check them out at brickhousepowercoffee.com. And if you use our code BigHeckWay10, you get 10% off your discount. I'm powering through. I'm drinking a cup right now, just to get through this episode, because, man, I really want to get this episode out to you guys. Without it, I'd have been dead to the world, just letting you guys know that without Brickhouse Power Coffee, I wouldn't be able to make it. And you guys got to try it. Get you some. That's right. I'm telling you, get you some. Get you some right now. While you're listening to my voice, jump on the computer, jump on the laptop, jump on your phone. Order it through the phone. Order 10, 20, 30, 40. Tell them Big Heck and Wade sent you. Gladly appreciate it. Shout out to the good brother, Clever Art. Man, thank you for our lovely logo once again. We also want to give a shout out to, and I always say we, because I know Big Heck, if he were here, he'd say the same thing, to Wrestler's Lab. Guys, there is a major event coming up, a big show coming up, where Wrestler's Laboratory is bringing a show to Ridgefield Park, New Jersey, called Take Control, where you get to see so much talent. It's going to be a bunch of talent, new talent that you've never seen before that you should keep your eyes on. Me and Big Heck have seen a lot of these people before, and you should get synonymous with them too. So if you are in the tri-state area, I need you to hop on to wrestlerslaboratory.com/tickets and pick you up some tickets, man. It's a show you can't miss. I've gone on record saying this. It's a show you can't miss. You got to be there for it. If not, you're missing out on something very, very awesome. Guys, check out the show. Get your tickets now. We'll be there. So many other people will be there. Hashtag Sell Out Front Row. This show is on March 21st. I feel like I've said everything I need to say. Oh, man. Got to cheap plug myself a little bit. Guys, if you want to follow us on Instagram, it is at Big Heck Wade Adventures. If you want to follow us on Twitter, at Big Heck Wade ADV. And if you want to follow us on Facebook, just search us up, Big Heck Wade Adventures. We are available on all streaming platforms. You can find us on our solo feed and also part of the Fourth Wall Pop Network, where we like to make it pop. On that note, this is the good brother, Wade, ending this with a peace, a salute, and I'm out. Love y'all. See y'all next week. Later.